So if you talk about ETJs, if you're not familiar with what the term ETJ is, extraterritorial jurisdiction, it relates to how far outside of the municipal boundaries does your ETJ exist. And depending on the size of your city, here's kind of the list. This is in the local government code about how far your ETJ extends. Obviously, the larger city you are, the further it extends. And that, traditionally going back and looking at annexations and forced annexations, and that's how cities would continue to grow, because once they would pass, once they would bring a certain portion into the city, then that ETJ would extend further, provided that it wasn't extending into another city's ETJ. Something to keep in mind, this is something that I find a lot of my clients don't remember. 2019 legislative session, cities must maintain a copy of the map of the city's boundaries and ETJ in a location that is easily accessible. It'll be the city's website. Some of you may have cities, and we say easily accessible, and you have to go into three different layers of drop-down menus and define those things. But again, that's something that should be maintained on the city's website. Doesn't make a difference on the type of city easily either. So as I talked about House Bill 347, that was when the big change came, right? That was when essentially we had no more tiers of annexation. We had tier one, tier two prior to that for one legislative session. And we were left with, as I stand here today, what we're left with is only basically consent-exempt annexations, annexations, I call them grandfathered annexations, and we'll talk a little bit about what these terms are. So what if your home rule charter, I had this question was asked to me by a council member. Hey, well, our home rule charter still allows us to do unilateral annexation, allows us to do forced annexation. What does that mean? If your home rule charter, if you have a home rule charter, what does that mean? Does it mean, thank you, state law prevails. Yes, exactly, state law prevails. Sometimes it's very difficult to explain that to a council member who really wants to see the city extend further. But yes, your state law prevails means you need to update your home rule charter, go through the process of that. That would be another discussion at a later date. So what are the procedures that a city must follow when they annex? And this is really the go-to slide for you to remember, okay, what type of annexation is it? And what procedure are we going to follow? And when I talk about C3, C4, and C5, those are the subsections in the local government code. C3, C4, and C5 are the subsections in the local government code. And it's annexation on request of the landowner. When the landowner comes in and says, I would love to come into your city, okay? Or the developer says, I would like to bring my development into your city. That's going to be on the request of a landowner. Then there's C4, that's annexations of areas with populations of less than 200, and that's done by, again, petition, where they come in and petition come into your city. And then C5 are the annexations of areas with populations of 200 or more, and that's also through the election or petition process. So, and then the consent-exempt annexations, I kind of talked about grandfather annexations, but consent-exempt annexations are found in Chapter C and C1, and that is your old process that you used to do. We used to do for unilateral annexations or forced annexations is in C1. So C1, C3, C4, and C5 are kind of your go-to subchapters, or just come and look at the paper, then go and look it up in the local government code. So we still have consent-exempt annexations that are in existence. It's very limited. I'm not going to go through each of these, because many of these you will not ever see. But there are a few that are worth talking about, and that's industrial districts. I'll mention that quickly at the end of the presentation. And your strategic partnership agreements. Strategic partnership agreements, and that's essentially an agreement that has been put in place. A lot of times you'll see this out with a development in the ETJ. That development is there. It's a special district, utility district under the water code. I believe it's chapter 49 of the water code. They put agreements in place with municipalities. There may be agreement that at some point in time, that special district will become part of the city. So those are still in place. When the new laws were enacted, the legislature so far has not gone out and voided out a lot of these agreements. I'll also mention development agreements, which is a requirement that you have to offer to somebody who has land in the ETJ or in the area that's going to be annexed and is using it for agriculture or farming type purposes. We'll talk a little bit about those because those are still in existence today. So again, if you're doing one of these, one of the eight listed here, we call them consent annexations, you're going to use the process under C1 of the local government code. And that requires the two public hearings, the notice publication requirements. It's the same type of requirements that have been in place years ago with the unilateral annexations. So we have consent annexations, authority procedure, you petition of the individual landowner, areas with less than 200 population petition, and areas of 200 or more. So these are the three we're left with that I'm going to go into now. Also, you still have to have a municipal annexation plan in place, which lists the maximum amount of annexations each year, service plan provisions, and hearing requirements, okay? So subchapter C3, annexations of areas on request of the owner. These are probably the most common ones that you'll see now is when somebody requests to come into the municipality.